Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 236 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her sugar? What? Oh my goodness, this is going to be a wild one, and I can't wait for you to hear from the expert, a dear, dear, wonderful friend and colleague of mine who's just written a rockin' book. Before we begin the show, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie. Now, here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because, honey, I am listening to you. So whatever your feedback is, cool things, share jokes, your life, anything, I love to hear from you. So you guys out there who keep doing it, well, all I can say is you're lighting up my life. So, all right, that's your first official reminder to give us that awesome feedback. All right, it's time for the show. Raise your hand if you have a super funky relationship with sugar. Yep, just what I thought. Well, we have someone here who is going to be helping you like there is absolutely no tomorrow, because we have a brand new book out. And if you don't get this book, you're a total loser. Okay, I'm just saying this. And so our expert is Molly Carmel. And what can I say? She's the founder of the Beacon Program in Manhattan, New York, and author of the groundbreaking book. Wait a minute, the ground is breaking under my feet. Breaking Up with Sugar, a plan to divorce the diets, drop the pounds, and live your best life. I like all of those things. Raise your hand. Yeah, you did too. All right. Molly is fiercely devoted to helping you break free of your destructive relationship with food and dieting. Oh boy. And she's also an expert in the field of eating disorders. Molly, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Hi, Pam, it's so exciting to get to talk to you.
I know. I'm just using the whole podcast as an excuse just to kind of hang out with you, Molly. I'm just saying. I'm throwing it up
exactly
there.
Exactly the same way.
Do you know? I mean, I'm just
minutes.
Really, totally. And so the book title I just loved, you know, this whole thing is Breaking Up with Sugar. And, you know, as I've been kind of playing with it a little bit, it's really interesting. You tell the whole story of your own breakup with sugar. Kind of give them an idea of what this was all about and a little bit about your background, you know, as an expert in eating disorders, how all of this melds together and led to the book.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had a complicated relationship with food from a really early age. I know you and I are both lovers of talking trauma, and I lost my father very traumatically right before I turned 3, and as it's told in my family, you know, that relationship with food got pretty wonky by 4, in that I was looking for it, you know, getting it on the table, we'd be at parties, I'd be about the food, you know, and so at the age of 7, I think not knowing what else to do, because my weight was of a concern, my mother took me to a nutritionist. And, you know, when I was turning to food when I was 4 and 5 and 6, I wasn't turning to carrots, you know, and apple slices, right? Like, I was seeking out the cookies, I was seeking out the candy, you know, the real sweets. And so it makes sense to me now, of course. Like, it was soothing me and it was numbing me, and I think it was making me feel included, and it was making sense of stories that I couldn't make sense of. But after that nutritionist at the age of 7 is really where the whole thing took off, right? Because then I was involved in a relationship with sugar and a relationship with compulsive dieting. And for the next, I don't know, 20-something years, it was like I would go on a diet, the diet would fail me, I would turn to sugar, demoralization, depression, weight gain, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. I'm sure your listeners relate to this. All of us do. And the whole time, I would have not told you that sugar was my problem. Quite the opposite. I would have told you it was my solution. And during this, you know, I had this real knowing that I was supposed to help people to find the solution to their issues with food and weight. I, like, knew it in my guts. And the way that that path went was that my professional path and my personal path kind of paralleled each other. And, you know, I would be trying every single conventional and unconventional way to release weight, right? Every single conventional diet program, the Nutrisystem of it all, the Weight Watchers of it all, the shakes of it all, the pills of it all, the acupuncture. And, you know, transparently, I was one of the early people to get bariatric surgery right after Carney Wilson did. And I was certain that this was going to be the solution. I was rerouting my intestines, you know, like this was going to be it. But wouldn't you know it, the weight was coming on hand over fist nearly 3 years after I had that intervention because I turned right back to sugar and I was binging my brains out. And when I was about 25 years old, I was recruited to start a boarding school for adolescent obesity, which was, to me, the job of a lifetime. It was everything I was hoping it would be. At that school, I was trained in very low-fat eating and in calorie counting, which at the time was very hip, right? Remember the honey mustard pretzel and the fro-yo and the fat-free brownie? I mean, this is the time of my life. And frankly, I was able to control my weight during that time because, you know, I was being served portions of food and, you know, walking a lot, doing a lot, you know, it was a very controlled environment. But when I left that environment and I started my own practice with that model, you know, it was a real turning point for me because I found two things to happen. The first thing was that in my clinic, I saw that people were not really finding solution in the way that I was hoping that they would. And they were binging their brains out. And, you know, it was like holding on for dear. It was a diet, you know? And I was living this double life, you know? And I was, you know, trying to help people during the day and really believing in my cause. And I was going home and binging my brains out at night. And, God, that it was just such a hard time for me spiritually and emotionally, to be honest with you. And I had that voice again that just said, you know, you have to solve this problem. You have to solve this problem. And at the time, you know, Robert Lustig was coming out with Sugar Bitter Truth. And, you know, the whole thing, I got to tell you, like, part of me knew this, you know, as a trained professional, but I just was protecting my sugar, you know, and, you know, calling people low-carb lunatics and just wanting to believe that I didn't have to break up. And at this really low point, oddly enough, my little brother had given up sugar, and I was really desperate because it is not a good look for your eating disorders therapist to be gaining weight. You know, it's just not, it's really not a believable situation for people. And I was really sick. And watching my brother give up sugar, I kind of just had this competitive moment. Like, I was thinking of it more as a fad diet. Like, if Mikey can give up sugar, I can give up sugar. And two incredible things happened when I gave up sugar. The first was I went through detox. And as an addictions therapist, I had this knowing, like, this is serious, right? Like, this isn't just me starting to count points again. And this is something very serious going on with me. I was sweating. I was moody, I was exhausted. I mean, I had the real thing. But then, you know, about 3 weeks in, oh my goodness, Pam, like, it was like going from black and white to seeing color. You know, first of all, my cravings were diminished almost entirely. I was releasing weight pretty easily. I was more hopeful. I mean, frankly, I started my clinic in New York City maybe 6 months after because I was just had so much energy and was able to step out of my comfort zone and do all these incredibly hard things. And And then I literally went in and took this one model that I was using, and I changed it. I turned it on its head. And I started to treat what I would call a harm reduction food addiction model, which is, because, you know, and you believe, I mean, biodiversity is biodiversity, and one size doesn't fit all, but I've been doing that ever since. And so it's been about almost 11 years that I've been broken up with sugar and been watching miracles happen. You know, and your book being another big piece of me really solidifying my program, you know, Hunger Fixes. Just such a wonderful book, and I loved how it was such a, you said it bravely way before I did. And so it's been amazing ever since. I got to tell you, yesterday somebody said to me, so like you never have a cupcake. And I said, you know, first of all, I don't know if I have another run in me. Like, I don't know if I really want to take that risk. And the other thing is my life is so sweet in and of itself that I don't need cupcakes anymore. They're like not my food.
And, well, you know, I love what you said. There were a couple of things here that, you know, are really important, I think, for the HER listeners out there as we've been listening to your story. And that is, first of all, you know, you acknowledge and are aware of the fact that you have an addictive eating behavior associated with processed sugar, with processed sugar. And that this is really, really important to be completely aware of. And the fact that really, quite frankly, this will always be with you to some degree or the other, that the more you practice healthy habits, as you've noted in your book, and I did when I wrote The Hunger Fix, the more you do that, then the more you realize that it becomes a habit to really say in a very, you know, reasonable tone, hey, that one particular food product just doesn't work for me. There's no yelling and, you know what I mean? It's like a real, you know, nice way to say it. What do you think?
I think also in my experience is that, you know, you only have to have two relationships in this world, right? One with food and one with yourself. And so what I found, and I think my clients would also say this, is like in the beginning it did feel, you know, punishing in a way. Like, why me? God, why do I have to give up the sugar? But, you know, and I think this happens when we make healthy choices in all relationships, right? What was punishing, there came this day about 66 days in where it was like, oh, I'm protecting this with my life. Like, there was a part, like, it was no longer a punishment. It was actually a gift I had received to have this kind of clarity. And frankly, for a girl who struggled with her relationship with food, I mean, 20 to 30 years of it, it's like to be have a solution that I can really embrace and have a loving relationship with food, I protect it now. So I agree that it's a habit, but to me, it's actually an ingrained relationship I have with food that I protect now. Like, why would I put this beautiful relationship at risk? I've been waiting for this my whole life. Prince Charming came, you know?
Yeah, I totally get it. So once you've kind of gotten to this place, right, I love some of the titles that you've used in your book, Liberation, Not Deprivation. You know, there are so many people out there who really believe it's like this terrible place. I'll never have another treat as long as I live. Let's redefine treat to something that actually works for you. Take it away, Molly. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I'm so with you. I mean, I think if we're really ever going to be in a healthy relationship with food, we have to really examine, is that a treat, right? Because what it often is short-term, for long-term demoralization, and who wants that, right? And I think any of the research that I know of talks about this idea of having to find new ways to nourish and nurture and, I guess, treat yourself. And I think it's about having a true and honest examination of, and I don't know, this might be true for somebody. It may be true, like you have this cookie and it is a treat and you would wish its impact on the people that you love the most. That may be true for some people. For some people, it may be, wow, like I would never want my daughter to eat a cookie, eat the whole sleeve, hate herself, feel hopeless, demoralized. I mean, and so I think that what I know, and certainly Marcia Linehan, the founder of dialectical behavioral therapy, would say is like, we have to find ways to tolerate distress that don't hurt us, right? And that's a whole, I read a lot about that, and finding nourishment and nurturing and joy, right? That research about finding joy that's outside of food. And also we can find food that loves us back. You know, it's not, I love what I eat every day. Like I'm psyched. It's lunchtime, the salad's here, can't get to it fast enough, but it loves me back. You know, it's a good relationship, me and my salad.
Okay, now let's do, you know, a day in the life of here, right? So what is it like for you to just wake up in the morning and do your thing? Let's do your life in one, you know, typical day.
Well, I just want to say, like, practice makes progress, right? So I've been doing this. The difference between me and maybe somebody who's listening is that I've been doing it for a really long time. This wasn't what it looked like all of the time. But I think it's pretty amazing because, I mean, you're totally a believer of this, but like change begets change. Like if you would have told me that I wake up in the morning and I meditate, right, and I say a few prayers. Like we have the same meditation teacher, Bob Ross. I'm a big believer in transcendental meditation because I think it helps with me being able to make choices with food that are so in alignment with my loving relationship with food. So I wake up and I meditate, and then I usually do some kind of other spiritual act. I pray or I journal or something just to get myself centered and ready to go. Eat some breakfast. So usually I love Ezekiel bread, and I have that with either some almond butter on it or maybe some cottage cheese or maybe some eggs. Oftentimes I'll do a workout in the morning or I'll just go to work. Love my job. Usually eat a salad with some protein in it, some carb source in it, some fat in it. Work. I'll have some nuts and a piece of fruit for my snack. You know, I usually, I live in New York City, so I actually eat out for dinner almost every night, which I need to say, I think it is essential that we're able to build our relationship with food into our big, beautiful life. So if you were selling me a relationship with food that said you have to go home and you have to weigh and measure everything, I'd be like, I'm out. No, thank you. That's not something I'm interested in. And, you know, I'll go out. I'll have, you know, a nice piece of fish and some vegetables. Like, it's very – I don't find it to be hard at all. I also think that if you would have told me 15 years ago that I would be at a really healthy body weight, that I would not be having cravings, that I would never be worried if my clothes fit, that my moods would be really regular, and I had a joie de vivre. I wanted to live life. I had a creative base. I would be like, what do I have to do to get that? And that's what I do every day, right? And I do a lot of things that go outside of my comfort zone because of Brené Brown's research about that helping us to experience joy. I make sure I connect with at least 3 people every day just so my heart stays open, right? Because isolation is such a thing for me, at least, in addiction. And it's a very good life is all I can say.
Oh, my God. Life. I just love it. I love that whole connect with 3 people a day. And, you know, it doesn't have to be BFFs at all. I mean, it could just be 3 people because, you know, human to human connection is worth its weight in absolute platinum. You never, ever know what will come out of that connection. You just don't.
Yeah, and it's like mostly my like normal friends. And I'm just like, and if I don't know what to do, I'll just check in on them. Like, hey, how's your day? And, you know, I'm such a connector. You know me. I need to be with my people all the time. And, you know, actually, I've found social media. I used to hate social media so much, but I've learned to use it as a connector, and I've actually learned to love it in that way, too. That beautiful research about connection and addiction, you know, that the rats just want so much less heroin when they're in community, it really speaks to me. in a big way.
Oh, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people out there, what would you say to people who say, oh, this is just a bunch of bunk, this whole issue of, you know, I mean, how could you be addicted to, you know, food stuff? I mean, what's that about? What would you say?
Well, I would say that they should take the food addiction. I mean, if you're not struggling with food, then I'm so happy for you. You know, go for you. But if you are, and if you've been doing it for a really long time, it's likely that you might have a relationship problem with sugar and flour. And, you know, and people maybe can argue this part about the dopamine. I don't really understand how, but maybe, okay, like my brain doesn't light up. But nobody can argue, and especially women, nobody can argue the impact it has on the endocrine system. And, you know, our hormones have enough problems going on as it is with us not sleeping, you know, and us being so stressed out. And so it's worth consideration. Like, I guess my answer back would be, what if it works? What if this is the thing that gives you freedom? Like, maybe extend your belief for one more minute. Like, the reason I think we get so willful and so closed off when it comes to food is, I think it's because of the repeated diet failure. I mean, it's made us a hopeless bunch. I totally get it. You know, and I always just beg people to try it one more time. Like, what if this worked? What if this is the thing?
I love it. I love it. And all right. So, you know, deal with this whole issue of deprivation. You know, it's that whole thing. You said it in your subtitle, divorce the diets. Well, how the heck does someone do that? When you talk to people out there who've been a graduate of every single flipping, you know, diet, whatever, that's ever flipped by their, you know, their magazine counter, and they read it all and they tried it all back and forth, and now they're just, you know, 2 seconds from throwing in the towel. What do you tell them about divorcing the diets?
Well, I think that, the divorcing dieting is as important as breaking up with sugar, because if you break up with sugar, that's just another diet. It's about committing to stay the course in the new relationship with food. And diet culture is exactly what you're saying. I mean, diet culture has made us into chronic cheaters. Like, one little thing isn't working in the relationship, and we're like, all right, I'm gone. I'm going to go on the next one. And I mean, that really does something to our spirit, Pam. I mean, really does something to our spirit. And I think it's, if I could do anything, I would beg people to get into relationship with food, because I don't know, like, every day at work, I have a great job, but there's days where it's really hard. I don't quit, right? Or I don't, you know, get into a fight with my partner and leave. But it's like we have a brownie and we're off to the races. And it's pretty bonkers. And it interferes with every long-term goal somebody has with food, right? Not to mention that the research really shows that those of us who are chronic dieters have actually cued our brains for a reward when we restrict, which means that the minute you're on that restrictive diet, your brain's like, great, so soon you're going to totally binge, right? And so we have to get out of this black and white relationship with food and get into the gray, because the other thing is, and diet culture would just be like, stop talking, Molly, but there is no question whether or not you're going to be making mistakes in this relationship with food. Like, you're not going to be following a plan perfectly for the rest of your life. And so perfectionism is a killer of this relationship, and learning, finding alternatives to being perfect is going to be the saving grace. It's like, we all need to go to couples therapy with food, you know?
Also, well, the other issue is that rein in your expectations. You know, as you age, you know, your relationship with food's going to change just biologically, whether you like it or not. Taste change. And as a woman, for instance, since this is the Her podcast, as a woman really courses through, say, perimenopause and menopause, she's going to notice that her tastes actually change. And that, you know, her whole approach to food begins to really change, because now truly it's more about health, wellness, health span, longevity. You know, suddenly everything changes. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and you just feel blessed and grateful to be here still. And honestly, it's about maintaining that level of robust vitality to live the life that you deserve and that you really want to live. And so
I love that.
Don't you love that? And so,
yes.
You know, that's why I think that, you know, if you think you're going to be eating the same thing and the same routine for the rest of your life, that's not what's going to happen. You know, as you get older, your needs change. You know, and biologically, you're going to have to go with the flow. And you get more attuned to what you need to maintain a foundation of health and wellness. And so that's why constantly checking in with your body and understanding what you need. You know, I was looking at, you know, again, your book, which I just couldn't put down. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Okay. There's this little beautiful section in the back that says, with a dash of self-love, this is all about the recipe for a love that lasts. And what is that love? Well, this is what you say. We've talked so much about the rehabilitation of your relationship with food, but how will you heal the relationship with yourself? How will you ever be able to practice self-love and build back your self-esteem? Those can seem like impossible concepts when you haven't experienced them, maybe ever. And that's the part that I love to be able to. And then you say, here it is. Here's the secret recipe. You create self-love and build self-esteem by being kind to and acting estimably toward yourself. Take it away, Molly. What the heck does that mean?
I think, you know, this diet drama and trauma that we have been in, it's like it does something to our personality and it does something to our relationship with ourselves. I mean, we've made transgressions against ourselves over and over and over again. Okay, Monday I'll do it. Okay, this time is going to be. And so people get so like, how do I love myself again? I hate myself. And the truth is, self-love is an action. It is. Self-love is an action. And we get self-love and we get self-esteem by little loving and esteemable acts. And so the truth is I would compel people to really redefine their definition of treat, right? And their definition of, you know, what eating and loving eating is, because I really think if they looked at it, all that noise, I was thinking about all the noise that comes when we're, you know, on this obsessive path of losing weight and this like 30-day cleanse. It's like, it's so noisy. It's self-hating. There is no way you would recommend that to somebody, ever, someone that you love. And so the truth is that when you can find a loving and healthy relationship with food, which is all action, right? I'm a behaviorist, right? So we don't think our way into better acting. We usually act our way into better thinking, and we most certainly can fast track our way into liking ourselves and then loving ourselves through acting in these amazingly loving ways, which is like doing the things we know work and these loving, eating in this loving way and getting rid of this delusion that like the cookie is really helping us. Like it's not, I mean, for some people maybe, but not most people. And it's redefining all of that so that you can have this peaceful mind and you can go to bed at night saying, wow, I really did my best today. I really treated myself lovingly. And days become weeks, become months, become years. And if you read my story, like I have sat with therapists and said, you know, I am unlovable. This is, you got a job on your hands, Mr. Therapist. And I stand here today, you know, through mostly action, being like, I'm pretty great and I love myself and my relationship with food is peaceful and it's loving and it's full of integrity. And I didn't know that that was possible. I really, really didn't. And it's imperfect, right?
I absolutely love the way you're shaping this. And all I can tell you is that just listening to your voice, how calm you are about it, how self-loving you are, and how reasonable and understanding, and mostly compassionate you are, because you're in a real state of been there, done that. I just think that that is so terribly important for people to hear. And it also gives them a ridiculous amount of hope about, you know, everything you can do. Everyone, I just want you to know, we've been listening to my wonderful friend and colleague, Molly Carmel, and she has written a book that seriously is excellent. It's a real groundbreaker. It's called Breaking Up with Sugar. Breaking Up with Sugar. And, you know, just go on out there and get the thing, because what I want you to do is examine your own relationship with sugar and then move it along and make some changes, because guess what? You can do that. There's no question.
You deserve that, you know?
Oh, no, there's no question about that. Oh, gotcha. Is there a best website where people can, you know, run on over and learn more about your work?
There sure is. It's mollycarmel.com. And actually, I created this anti-perfection plan. It's for free, so that we can start to get more flexible in this new relationship with food. It's like perfectionism is a big piece of our relationship problem. I can promise you that.
Okay, excellent. And again, we've been talking to Molly Carmel, and the book is Breaking Up with Sugar. I can't thank you enough for being on the Her podcast. And everyone out there, please take a minute right now to hit iTunes and rate and review the show, because I want to know what you have to say, because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Hey, thanks for listening today, and stay well.